So here's something we take for granted. The index at the back of the book, it's been around forever. Well, actually, not so much. For centuries, there were no easy ways to find printed information. That's according to author Dennis Duncan. He's just published a book called, pay attention here, it's called Index, A History of the. He's a lecturer at University College London and joins us. Dennis Duncan, welcome.
Hello, thank you so much for having me.
Why a history of the index of all the things you could write about?
Well, that's a really good question. I think at the moment we could, if you like, say that we're living in the age of search. But underpinning the search engine that we use dozens of times every day is this invention that came about at the start of the 13th century. It was invented by monks in Europe. It's an index. And Google will say this. Google says that their search engine operates according to two principles. One is crawling and the other is indexing. It goes away and it crawls the internet and it finds every single page. And then it puts it into an order so that you can find it. When you type something into Google, it doesn't go off and search the internet. It's already done that. It searches its index of the internet. So I think it's an interesting time now to think about the history of the index. How did we end up in the age of search? What is this thing that we do almost without thinking of it, this data structure that governs so much of the way that we use information digitally and with books?
Well, let's unroll a couple moments in this history that you write about. I understand one of the key moments was the arrival of alphabetical order.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so in order to have an index, you need two things. I mean, an index is really two columns. It's one that has a list of the things that you're looking for, and that has to be in alphabetical order, so you know how to navigate it. And the other is where to go, pointing, indicating where that can be found. So first of all, you need alphabetical order.
Then
you need,
as it were.
Then exactly. And then you need page numbers or something like that, locators. So alphabetical order, you think, okay, that's something that's been around forever. Really, it hasn't. And there's no particular reason that the letters of the alphabet are in the order that they are. The real reason that we have the letters of the alphabet in an order is because it makes it easier to learn them. If you're a school child going A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you sing the letters of the alphabet to the tune of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. That's why an order is really useful. But a big, incredible idea that happened at the Library of Alexandria round about just after the year 300 BC, was, well, what if I take that thing that everybody knows, which is the order of the letters of the alphabet, and then I use that to point to something else? What if I have a table where the thing that you don't know where to find is mapped to the thing that you do know, which is the orders of the letters of the alphabet?
I understand one of the other big moments here in this timeline is preachers. At some point, preachers needed quick ways to find certain references in the Bible.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we're talking about the start of the 13th century, the early 1200s here, and there are two big new things going on. One is the universities. The idea of the university has just arrived in the last few decades in Bologna and Paris and Oxford. And university teachers need to be able to use books in a faster way in order to write their lectures, in order to teach. And the other thing is the preaching orders. Instead of monks living in isolated communities who have literally all of their lives to read books, we have friars who live in the cities, who go out preaching sermons. Now, if you're going to write a sermon every week, you're going to need to use the Bible rather than just read the Bible. I'm going to do a sermon on, say, bread. Okay, well, the Lord's Prayer goes, give us this day our daily bread, and then I'm going to pivot from that to the manna. Then where else can I go for bread? So the index allows preachers and teachers, people who are writing sermons and people who are writing lectures, to use the Bible initially more efficiently.
I love your examples of index as weapon, right?
Yeah.
Page 114 in the book. 1965, we have two public intellectuals in the U.S., William F. Buckley and Norman Mailer. They spar. Mailer tells Buckley, you can't quote me in your book, right? Take it from there. What happens?
Well, Buckley does quote him. And then when the book comes out, Buckley sends Mailer a copy of the book. But before he puts it in the post, in the index at the back, page 336 or something, there's an entry for Mailer, Norman. And just against that entry, Buckley writes, hi. And what he knows is that when Mailer gets the book, the first thing he's going to do is turn to the back and see if he's in it. So it's a sort of, I see you, I see what you're doing, I see your narcissistic impulse to see if you're in the book. I've beaten you to it.
Yeah, for the egomaniac, I know where you're going to turn first, and I'm ahead
of
you.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're looking yourself up.
Yeah. What makes a good index, in your opinion? I imagine if you do it a certain way, it can be way too long.
Well, that's a really good question. Now, if you have a PDF or a Word document, you can hit Command and F or Control and F, and you can jump through that document looking for individual words. As long as you know the word you're looking for, every digital document, if it's a web page, comes kind of indexed in that way. And that's very useful for some things, but it doesn't work if you don't know the word you're looking for, if you're looking for a concept. So I'll give you an example, going back to the Bible again. Imagine you had a PDF of the Bible, and you're thinking, what's that story? You know, the story about forgiveness, the famous one about the son. The most famous story about forgiveness in the Bible, the prodigal son, doesn't include the word forgiveness. It doesn't include the word mercy. It doesn't include the word prodigal. So sometimes it's an idea that you're looking for rather than you don't know the exact word for it. So what makes a good index? I still think a human makes a good index. And what makes for a good index? One that intuits, how is this book going to be used? One that sort of second guesses what type of reader and what are the things that the reader is going to want to look up.
Well, perhaps this is, I've got your book in my hand here, and you have your book about index has two indexes. I guess I should ask you, is the plural indexes or indices?
I'm quite strict about this. I think the plural should be indexes. Now, if you speak to a mathematician or a statistician, they work with indices. But at the back of a book, you find indexes. This is because Shakespeare uses it. Shakespeare in Troilus and Cressida has a line about indexes. And you think, okay, well, if it's good enough for Shakespeare, who am I to stick to the Latin form?
The first index is a computer-generated index, and you just go through the A's here. And what's the point here? You have one that an editor, a human, makes after this, but what's the point here?
Well, the idea is there is currently software that you can buy and publishers sometimes use that will produce an index for you. And I wanted to show people that that's still not that good. The state of the art in artificial intelligence produced indexes isn't very good. So we get, I ran my book through an index generator, and it just crops phrases from the book. So I can't remember some of them they used, like all the words was a phrase they used. Alas, I've used 15 times or something like that. Nobody's going to want to look up alas or all the words or things like that. It's kind of surreal, actually, the things that get pulled out here. But it's also not very useful because you would have to spend so much time cutting it down. The second index in my book is a proper one, produced by a lady called Paula Clark Bain, who is a professional indexer, member of the Society of Indexers. And it's a masterpiece. If you have read my book and then you think, where's that bit about such and such, Paula's index will help you. She's incredibly done a great job of that, intuiting what are people going to want to look up here. But the other thing is, it's completely full of Paula's personality. This is why humans make good indexes or better indexes still, because it's so stamped with Paula's personality. She's training to be a crossword setter as well as an index, a cryptic crossword setter. So one of the things that you see in it is are these, you know, occasionally there's entries that are anagrams of other entries and stuff. It really has so much personality in, which is something that the software certainly can't do. I'm very, very proud of Paula's index.
Finally, Dennis Duncan, let me ask you about index cranks, I guess. I imagine over the years there have been people saying, well, listen, nobody's going to read anything anymore. If they're just going to Google something, if they're just going to go to the back of the book, nobody's going to read the actual book.
This is so true. But what I say in the book is that this has been around as far back as you want to go. This idea, nobody reads properly anymore. You can find in the early 1500s, you can find in the late 1400s, Erasmus, the great European intellectual of the first part of the 1500s, writes a book in the form of an index. And in the preface, he says, I had to do it this way because these days that's the only bit people read. So there's this kind of snark about if you give people a way of using books or only finding the part they need, then nobody will read properly anymore. And I suppose my argument is that's simply not true. We still read books and we use books and we read tweets and we read newspapers and we read advertisements. The idea nobody reads properly anymore is a complete misunderstanding of what the word read means. Read is an umbrella term for so many different modes, and indexes have been around for 800 years and they haven't killed off the book. So I think I have a slightly Pollyanna-ish approach to this, and I want to tell people it's all right. Use the index. Use Google. Yeah, don't let the naysayers make you feel bad about the way that you read.
Dennis Duncan is the author of the new book, Index, A History of the, a bookish adventure from medieval manuscripts to the digital age. I guess read it from the front or the back, depending on how you want to go. Dennis Duncan, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.